My name is Laura Coley. I'm the pastor around here, and I want to welcome you again to Broad Street Ministry. We are delighted to have you with us here this evening. I'm absolutely thrilled to be able to introduce our guest preacher and speaker for today, Jeff Chu. Jeff is a freelance reporter, speaker, and writer. He's written for The Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, Sojourner's Time, The New York Magazine, New York Times Magazine, to name a few. His book, Does Jesus Really Love Me? A Gay Christian's Pilgrimage in Search of God in America, explores the intersections of faith, politics, and sexuality in Christian America. And if you have the opportunity, we would love for you to stay after worship. Jeff is going to read from his book and answer a few questions. So right after worship, stick around here. Jeff is currently a seminarian at Princeton Theological Seminary, and he is involved with the Farminary Agricultural Project there on campus. He comes from a family filled with Baptist preachers, Sunday school teachers, deacons, and church musicians. Jeff has spent time in the evangelical worshiping communities, Anglican and Reform communities. He is a candidate for ordination in the RCA, the Reformed Church in America. And when he's not in school, he and his husband live in Brooklyn, New York. Jeff loves clementines and the book of Ecclesiastes. He hates marzipan in a deep and profound way. He's an introvert, so we're really grateful to have him here. And I think you are the first self-proclaimed Enneagram 6 I've ever actually met, although that's supposed to be most of them, which is great. From what I know about Jeff, he is thoughtful and curious and warm. He offers his readers and listeners a genuine vulnerability, as well as an honest searching for God in this broken and beautiful world of ours. So would you please join me in welcoming Jeff Chu, our guest preacher.
Good afternoon, friends. If I had known what music we would be hearing just before the sermon, I would not have bothered to write one. I think we could go home fed by that. But here we are, and I wrote something, so we'll see how it goes. Church, I want to ask you this afternoon, what do you believe? I have heard from afar the testimonies of your good work here, of your faithfulness, of what you do in this city, the good news that you've been proclaiming to people who so desperately need it. I also understand that you've been through a season together, a season of change, a season of uncertainty, a season of agitation, a season of coming into church on Sunday not exactly knowing what the next Sunday will look like or feel like, except that it's probably not going to be what the Sundays before it have looked like or felt like. So amid all that, I ask you, what do you believe? I guess that's sort of my way of asking you why you're still here, which is what I want to explore with you this afternoon. I almost said this morning, it's been a while since I've preached in the afternoon, but there's something wonderful symbolically, given our text, about gathering at a time when most people don't for worship. It pushes against my comfortable habits. It forces me to think a little differently about my Sunday rhythm and then being in the sanctuary that has been turned around. It upends the norm, which is why it's good we're spending some time together in the Gospel of Luke, because Luke's all about upending norms, especially of the four Gospels. Luke, for instance, is the one who gives women the most prominent place, right? He's also the only New Testament writer we know for sure wasn't Jewish. He's the one who focuses the most on those who have been traditionally excluded from community. The Good Samaritan, remember, shows up only in Luke's Gospel. So do you believe in a good news that upends norms? Do you believe in a Jesus who likes things topsy-turvy? And do you believe in love? Not an easy love. I have to disagree with John Lennon and Paul McCartney there. It's not easy. Not this world's love, not romantic, heart-palpitating love, or Oscar-winning big-screen love, or giving lots to charity, love, not that I want you to not give to charity, or love that's only for people we actually like? Can you believe in a ridiculous, otherworldly love? Let's travel together with Luke back 2,000 years. Close your eyes if it helps you. And consider who you might be in this story. And what story of your own you bring to this man called Jesus. Imagine a great wide open area at the foot of a mountain. There are some scraggly trees on the slopes, but not a lot down on the flats. There's little shade, it's sunny, and it's hot, not like today. It's dusty. And people have walked for hours, some for days. They've heard this Jesus can heal them. Men and women, backs bent, leaning on walking sticks, some barely upright. People with skin diseases, wounds festering, flies around them. Some seem out of their minds. They're shouting, howling, cursing, beside themselves. Parents carrying little babies and toddlers, some of them near comatose, others writhing in pain. And everybody's jostling for space because they want to get close to Jesus. They've heard this man can work wonders, perform miracles. And Luke says power came out from him and healed all of them. All of them. Can you believe that? Whatever illness, whatever pain, whatever story, he healed everyone who showed up. No wonder you're getting pushed around. No wonder you're questioning if personal space exists. No wonder they have to get as close as they can to this Jesus. And then we come to this afternoon's passage, and for the first time in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus decides to preach a sermon. Before this, he's been healing people, recruiting disciples, and now he finally has something to say in words. Everyone strains to hear the teacher. There's no microphone, no loudspeakers, no personal space, no etiquette, really. Babies are crying. People are asking each other what this Jesus is saying, which they might be able to hear if they would stop asking each other what Jesus is saying. And above the din, he says, "Blessed are you who are poor, who are hungry. Blessed are you who weep, and when people hate you, and when people exclude you." Can you believe that? What he says goes entirely against the picture of the good life, then and now, theirs and ours. The good life is wealth, right? Wealth and abundant tables, happiness and belonging among the elite. And that is not this crowd. Sure, there might have been a few rubberneckers there just for the show, but almost everyone actually needed something. They needed healing. They needed hope. They needed something they couldn't even name, but they could certainly feel it. They weren't so different from you and from me, I'm guessing, you who came to church this Sunday. Because you need some healing? Because you need some hope? Because you have this feeling inside of you that you can't put words to, but you know it's there in your heart and in your gut. Maybe it's healing for your body. Maybe it's healing for your mind. And maybe it's both. Maybe it's in that place where, as Miller Williams writes, where your spirit meets your bone. Maybe you need a word of hope at a time when the government seems unjust. Maybe you need hope in a season where it seems there's never enough food or money. Or hope for a generation in which inequality seems more fixed or more unchangeable than ever. Or hope for your kids or for your children's children. Hope for things you can't even name because you just feel like your life is going nowhere good. And Jesus' words seem comforting at first. The poor and the struggling will have all they need. The rich and comfortable should be forewarned. Yes, they say, yes, we will inherit God's kingdom. We will be filled up. Yes, you say, we will laugh and they will be hungry. They will mourn and weep like we've been mourning and weeping. They will be ridiculed like we have been ridiculed, and they will suffer like we will suffer. Do you want to believe that? Because it feels right to us as human beings. Jesus turns the tables, upends our hierarchies, and brings new ones, right? But I say to you that listen, no. I say to you that listen, Jesus doesn't do things quite the way we would like him to do them. And I say to you that listen, the love that Jesus calls us to isn't the kind of love that we are tempted toward. Because it isn't just for us, or for those who look like us, or think like us, or those we like, or those we think deserve love. I say to you that listen, love your enemies. I'm so annoyed that I picked this passage to preach on. Any of us who have spent time in church have heard this line. But when you stop and think hard about it, it seems even more ridiculous than the last time you read it before. It should seem ridiculous to any of you who are hurting, any of you who feel you are being hurt by others, any of you who have been oppressed. It should seem ridiculous. It should seem ridiculous when our siblings in the United Methodist Church are asking whether there's a full place for our LGBTQ siblings. It should seem ridiculous when we're more focused on raising up walls than building bridges. It should seem ridiculous because Jesus is saying, I know you're hurt. I know you're hurt, but I want you to love those who are hurting you. I want you to love those who oppress you. And I want you not only to love them, but I want you to bless them. And I want you to pray for them. And I want to say, what the hell are you doing, Jesus? Bless the corrupt government official. Bless the Roman soldier. Bless the homophobe. Bless the rich man who dehumanizes you. Bless the officer who comes to deport you. Bless the racist. Bless the wealthy woman who treats you like the help. Bless the smug liberal who thinks he's living a progressive life. Bless the comfortable conservative who doesn't even think of the humanity of the refugee. Bless the white moderate who asks for a little more time, a little more patience, a little more quiet. Bless the schoolyard bully. Bless the power-hungry politician. Bless them and pray for them and love them. This is ridiculous. Can we be honest and admit that this seems a bit like injustice? A few moments ago, Jesus was blessing us, the ones who need the blessing and the love and the prayers. And now he's asking us to bless and pray for and love them. Can you believe that? What if this is Jesus' reign? What if this is Jesus' reign under which there is no us and there is no them? What if this is actually what radical equality looks like? That all are at once equally worthy and unworthy of Christ's love. Not some sinners and some saints, but all sinners and all saints. Messy and marvelous, broken and beautiful simultaneously. What if this is God's justice? Not our justice, but God's justice, that all wrongs are made right, not according to our hearts, which call for revenge and retribution, but God's ridiculous grace and God's otherworldly love. And what if God meets each of us where we are, giving each human being the nurture and new life that each human being needs to transform the bodies we are in this life, these diverse shells that carry beauty and pain, laughter and doubt, delight and disease, into what Paul calls the body that is to be. Isn't that enough? Shouldn't that be enough? Can you believe that that's enough? God's otherworldly love does not make sense in our world. This love leaves nobody out. This love sacrifices itself. This love stands in resistance to the way things are normally done. This love says there's enough for you, and there's also enough and more than enough for them, and for that other person, and for that other one, and especially for the one who's annoying and who you don't want to talk to after church. This is the love that says, even after you have received it, that there is more than enough to go around. When we bless people and when we pray for people, we call on God to do God's miraculous work, to change them as they need to be changed. But we're also calling on God to do another miraculous work, to keep changing us, to give us the humility not to overestimate our goodness or to underestimate our sin, to give us the tenderness never to stop caring, to give us the strength to stay in difficult relationships, to give us the courage to keep loving our way through this world. God's otherworldly love is the kind of love that makes you want everyone else to know it too, because it softens your hard places, those hard places inside of you. And it tempts you to think the best of others. And it brings out the kindest, gentlest side of yourselves. This love isn't just thought either, it's action. Notice what the scripture says. This love doesn't just wish others well. It does good to them. This love speaks out for others when you see them suffering injustice. This love tells people they're never alone. This love compels you to give the coat off your back, and maybe even your shirt, because maybe that person still isn't warm. And this love doesn't worry so much about what others think, because you know you are profoundly and deeply loved, unquestionably loved by the only one who matters. Can you believe that? Do you believe that you are profoundly, deeply, and unquestionably loved by God? If you can't, and if you don't, not in your bones and not in your soul, then I want you to consider one more thing. Maybe this difficult command that Jesus has for us, this command that Jesus has for you, is so challenging because the first enemy that you need to learn to love is yourself. Perhaps when Jesus is telling us to love our enemies, he's beginning with the reality that many of us have hated and still hate ourselves. We have fought against ourselves. We have abused ourselves. We have thought the worst of ourselves. We have harmed ourselves. We have done terrible things to our own bodies and our own souls. We have harmed these creatures who, despite being created by God and loved by God, have not treated himself, herself, themselves as loved. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you only sounds like good news if you know you are loved. Let me be personal with you for just a moment and confess something. I struggle with this deeply. I know my own sin. I know my own tendencies to denigrate myself. I'm reformed. That's what we do. There have been moments when the darkness is so overwhelming that I've questioned whether this life is still worth living. Some of you, I know what I'm talking about. I know my own habit of resisting God's goodness. Even as I focus on the bad things in me, I reject my husband's encouragement. I resent the affirmations that my friends offer. I think if they only really knew me, what would they think? I'm often my own worst enemy, And I struggle to love this enemy. Because sometimes I worry that on a fundamental level, I am unlovable. These are lies. Can you believe that, these are lies? It's a lie that you are unlovable. And when you believe such a lie, you become the foolish seed. The foolish seed that refuses to shed an old body and grow into the new one as promised. It's hard to hang on to the truth of God's otherworldly love. Our hearts are tired, our souls are dry, our imaginations are exhausted. We struggle to envision the beauty of what could be when we're so fixated on the ugliness of what is. We don't even know what transformation might look or feel like. Love your enemies sometimes just makes me want to run away because it seems so absurd and so weird. How is this good news for us? And then Jesus whispers to me again that love your enemies is good news. As long as we're talking about an otherworldly love, as long as we're talking about a love that transforms lives and hearts and souls. Can you believe that? To love your enemies means to learn to love what the world has told you is less than. Your sexuality, your gender, your flaws, your skin, your scars, your story. To love your enemies means to resist the temptation of this world, which says there isn't enough love to go around. To love your enemies means to push back against this culture which wants to demonize those who aren't like us and dehumanize those who dehumanize us. To love your enemies means to make space for those who refuse to make space for you. To love your enemies means not to shame, especially for those of us who have been shamed. To love your enemies means to declare that all who God has made without exception are worthy of love. Who are we to say that those whom God loves are not worthy of our love? This is why you're here, friends. You want to be near the magnetic Jesus, the miraculous Jesus, the Jesus who calls to us from the plain, the Jesus who wants to heal us, the Jesus who showers us with this love, hoping that we will learn to love ourselves and one another. You want to be part of a community that reminds each other that they too are loved and that you share these heavenly gifts. You want to be a part of a church that shares this embrace and that repeats Jesus' words week after week, singing them out into a world that needs them. You will be healed, you are being blessed, and you are loved. This is good news, friends. That you are loved. This good news is for you. Can you believe it?